At IHM VCU, we've always been here for you. You are and always will be our top priority. We care about your financial health, and we are here. IHM VCU is a proud supporter of WQPT.
The future, that's where our minds are at Western Illinois University Quad Cities. We are innovators, searching for something new outside of the textbooks. Dog-loving, leadership-driven, world-changing. Whether you choose to study on campus or online, your future is designed on your terms. Start your future at wiu.edu/QC.
Public Affairs programming on WQPT is brought to you by the Singh Group at Merrill, serving the wealth management needs of clients in the region for over 35 years.
The election is over, and we knew this could get messy. What to make of the results we know and those we don't know in the cities? This election has been one where we knew there'd be challenges to the vote count, and we knew the dust might not be settled by election night. It's going to be an interesting few days. The day after the election, on Wednesday, we talked with Western Illinois University political scientist and Arts and Sciences Dean Dr. Keith Beckelman about what just happened and what still might happen in this 2024 election.
Are you at all surprised by what happened election night?
I am surprised in a couple of respects. I think it was a toss-up election, so I didn't necessarily know which way it was going to go. But I thought, like in 2016, it would be likely that if Trump won the Electoral College, he might lose the popular vote. But the way things are going, it looks like he's going to win both the Electoral College and the popular vote.
And that's what I thought was interesting, is in an election that a lot of people assumed would be perhaps much closer, or would be, as you said, a repeat with the Democrats once again winning the popular vote, doesn't seem to have materialized.
No. And so, you know, clearly the polls were underestimating Trump's strength. Now, I did think that it would be certainly plausible that all the swing states would kind of move in the same direction. And that is what ended up happening. But I guess I thought in the end, the election would be closer than what it was. And so as of this morning, you know, there's still a few states not called, but it looks like Trump will win Michigan almost certainly. And then the few of the further state west, Western states, we don't know for sure. But yes, I was surprised by the strength of the Trump victory.
Also. Well, and let's talk about, you mentioned one of the states, Michigan, Pennsylvania, Florida, Georgia, North Carolina, Wisconsin. I mean, I want to go through a couple of these states, but I mean, Pennsylvania, the Keystone State, was supposed to be key. And sure enough, it did come down to that. North Carolina, the Democrats had been making advances in that state. Florida seems to be going further red than before, becoming a very much a Republican state. And Wisconsin and Georgia, still kind of that toss up.
Well, yeah. And so one thing I thought, the dynamics of the campaign, and it plays into some of these swing state races, that it seemed to be with, you know, Trump's rally a week and a half ago on the Sunday, when the comments about by his opening act about the, you know, Puerto Rico being a garbage island and so forth, it seemed like the trend might be toward Harris. But the exit polls are suggesting that's not true, and the trend ended up being toward Trump. So I guess that sort of adds a surprise. I mean, I think the Democrats were certainly expecting to win Wisconsin, hoping to win Pennsylvania, hoping to win North Carolina, but none of that came through. And so I think the late-breaking voters ended up going toward Trump, and that's a little bit of a surprise to me as well, because the end game of his campaign seemed a little bit off message and getting publicity for the things you don't normally want to get publicity for, insulting people and so forth. And so that was a little surprising to me as well.
Is Donald Trump the absolute Teflon candidate?
Well, I think he must be. And I think, you know, I heard a story on the radio when I was driving into work this morning, and they were talking about some other exit polls. And they said what the exit polls are showing is that people don't like Donald Trump very much, but they think he's a leader. And that's why he ended up winning. And so I think some of the things that the insults, you know, various racial minorities and women, for a normal candidate, it would be, if not damaging, if not deadly, damaging at least. But it didn't seem to be that way for him. But this perception as a leader seemed to be what pulled him through.
And as a strong man, I mean, let's right. be honest, he did very well with men, and he was really seemingly his campaign was targeting particularly young men. And does that say something about society? Because you know as well as I do, I mean, you've got these momentums and swings in society where you had a period of more liberalism towards, let's say, marijuana and drugs and LGBTQ issues, and that it is swinging the other way, and that this election is further proof of that.
Well, I think there is certainly a lot to that. And, you know, there's been a lot of discussion of the crisis, quote unquote, of young men. That young men are not doing as well as women in school, that at least in the early years of the job market, they're not, you know, making as much money and their incomes have eroded more than young women. And so I think there's a lot of frustration with that. And Donald Trump certainly speaks to that. I think, you know, his message is if you're frustrated with the status quo, I'm your guy. If you're angry, I'm your guy. And so I think for many young men in particular, that was a winning message. I unfortunately was not able to see anything broken down by age, but I did look at some of the exit polls for men and women, and it's a perfect mirror. For men, it's about 54 to 40 for Trump. For women, it's about 54 to 40 for Harris. And so, you know, the breakdown was very interesting to me on that respect. But I do think you have at least a segment of the population among men who are frustrated with the status quo and see the need for change. And I think that, you know, Trump is appealing to that block, whereas many women are doing well economically, maybe in some ways better than men, particularly among younger women. And so I think there's a more of an argument for them to go for the Democrats and to kind of continue the way things are going.
Well, and you know that the Democrats did very well on the issue of reproductive rights 2 years ago in the midterm elections, and were really hammering that home in this election at both the congressional, the state level, as well as the national level. And yet, as you point out, Harris's support among women was still only in the mid-50s when I'm sure she was anticipating an even stronger turnout for her among women.
Yeah, I mean, I don't have any real evidence for this, but I sense that maybe abortion has faded a little bit as an issue. That I guess if I had to say the big two were probably the economy, particularly inflation and immigration, and maybe abortion third. But I think it maybe didn't have as big of an impact as it did, say, in the 2022 midterms when the Democrats did better than many people thought they would in the congressional elections.
And you do point out immigration, and it seemed like for Republicans, it was a marrying of both immigration and crime. So security and safety, that even in rural areas, let's say of Illinois and Iowa, the feeling of a sense of a lack of security, of even safety, was really hammered home effectively by Republicans.
Yeah, I mean, I think that messaging was effective, clearly, as you say. Now, the irony is, you know, the crime rate is really not going up. I mean, it spiked a little bit during COVID, but in general, violent crime has been down to stable. But I think that messaging has been effective, that you're under attack and that you're unsafe. And I think that worked in Trump's favor and then the Republicans more broadly.
You take a look at Donald Trump's three campaigns for the presidency, and particularly this last one. I mean, is it a blueprint for future elections? I mean, everyone's going to be studying this campaign, of course, and everyone's going to be studying the governance and the campaigns of Donald Trump. There's going to be major takeaways that'll impact politics for generations.
Well, you know, you mentioned Trump being Teflon, and I think related to that, Trump is in many ways unique. I mean, I think about the possible successors, you know, like J.D. Vance, obviously, Ted Cruz, you know, maybe Josh Hawley. I'm probably leaving some out, but I don't think that they have the same kind of aura or charisma or whatever you want to call it that Trump has. And that's something that's really hard to train people for. I mean, you sort of either have it or you don't. And, you know, I think by conventional wisdom, Trump has made some huge mistakes and honestly seems to have run terrible campaigns. But I think his qualities as a candidate have been able to overcome that in ways that I don't know that other candidates would be able to do. So I think there's this kind of question about Trump and Trumpism more broadly. Will Trumpism outlast Trump, and who will be the spokesman for Trumpism? I think the other question going forward is, it looks like the Republican Party right now is all in on Trumpism, but you also have other voices like Nikki Haley and so forth, who I think will probably still be in the mix in 2028. And so the question would be, you know, are any of these potential successors, will they be able to present the same kind of charismatic presence that Trump has? And would they be able to carry on Trumpism within the Republican Party, or does it revert more to a more traditional Republicanism that might be represented by someone like Nikki Haley or someone like that?
Well, and you bring up Nikki Haley, and she said the day after the election, describing Donald Trump, he defied gravity. And you look at people like Elon Musk, who have had major fights, even J.D. Vance, who is labeled Trump, to Hitler even.
Right.
And you have Nikki Haley, who ran a very aggressive campaign against Donald Trump. And it seems like they all fall into line at a certain point. And all is forgiven, at least as far as they are concerned.
Yeah, that's right. And, you know, I think they see where the energy in the Republican Party is. It was with Donald Trump, clearly. But again, one thing I'm trying to think of, and I don't really have answers to this, but sort of separating out Trumpism as a policy program versus Trump the personality. And I think that maybe the Trumpism as a policy program may be a harder sell without Trump at the top of the ticket. Maybe that's a way to put it.
Let's talk about governing for the next 4 years. I mean, Donald Trump, there's been a bit of forecasting of Robert F. Kennedy Jr.'s future with the administration, with a leading role in regards to healthcare. Elon Musk, who could have a major impact on business legislation moving forward in a Trump administration. A great deal of mistrust of the military by Donald Trump. It's going to be an interesting, at least the first 2 years, to see who still remains in favor after the first 2 years, but definitely the next four.
Yeah, and I mean, I think, you know, there's this old saying, personnel is policy. So I think one thing to watch along that line is who Donald Trump puts in these positions of power this time around. The first time around, it was more traditional Republicans. And I think he sort of chafed at that and fought with them in some ways. I think this time it's going to be more his people. And so, you know, when he says jump, they're more likely to say how high. But I think there also will be, you know, some degree of infighting probably against the different factions of Trumpism. I'll be very interested to see what J.D. Vance's role in the administration is. You know, he's, I think, in my view, more policy oriented and more oriented toward implementing the Trump program than even Trump is. I mean, I think Trump in some ways likes being president, and he certainly has policy preferences, but the day-to-day job of being president and carrying out those policies, I'm not sure that always interests them as much, but it certainly interests J.D. Vance. And so it'll be interesting to see, you know, what his role is in the administration carrying out these policies. And, you know, I'm very interested to see who, like, for example, who will be Secretary of State, who will be Secretary of Defense, because I think there are big questions about what's going to happen with Ukraine and U.S. support for Ukraine. What happens with Israel. So I think those foreign policy questions are particularly interesting to me. But like you mentioned, RFK and Elon Musk's role, you know, he's talked about him being this sort of efficiency czar that's going to get the, you know, cut wasteful spending from government and cut government back. My question is, if he starts to look at big programs like Social Security and Medicare, will there be a backlash against that? And many of Trump's supporters benefit from those programs. So I think it's going to be interesting to watch how the policy aspect of this plays out.
Well, and one of the strongest cards in the deck now for Republicans, at least for Donald Trump, is also control of the Senate and perhaps the House as well.
Right.
So I mean, have the legislative, the executive branch, and in some ways the judicial branch, all somewhat either Republican or conservative leaning. So America is taking a very big change in governing.
Right. And there's this theory in political science, the thermostatic theory, is that parties often overinterpret their mandate. And so when they win, they see that as the voters saying, well, we want everything in the party's platform. Even though, you know, this is not a close election, I thought it's still a relatively close election. I mean, we're looking at Donald Trump at, you know, a little bit over 50% maybe. So it's possible that the Republicans, as both parties have done in the past, overplay their hand and they do things that may be unpopular. So, you know, we'll see how that all plays out. You know, again, I think the Republican Party is pretty united behind Trump. We don't know where the House is going yet. I mean, I think it looks like it's probably going toward Republican control, but it hasn't been decided yet. The Senate will be in Republican hands. You know, one thing kind of related to what we've been talking about is the confirmation process. So, you know, nominating RFK Jr. to Health and Human Services Secretary, or nominating Elon Musk or whatever, in some new department or whatever it's going to be. These have to go through the Senate. So the Republicans have 52 right now. If they pick up a few more, it's a lot easier to get this stuff through than if they don't. So, you know, that's another thing to kind of keep in mind.
And with the Senate, of course, additional federal judgeships would be decided in Republican favors.
So, you know, clearly the judgeships, I think it's doubtful to me whether Elena Kagan or Sonia Sotomayor retire from the Supreme Court now, given the election results. You may have some of the Republican justices that are older retiring, knowing that they would have a Republican Senate and a Republican president replacing them. So I wouldn't be surprised if Clarence Thomas, for example, maybe Alito retired, but that wouldn't really change the makeup much, really at all.
What do you think is the future of polling and polls across America? And you also look at the Iowa poll that was released by Mediacom, and a lot of people were going, that's amazing that Democrats are leading and by a large margin in some ways with that highly regarded Des Moines Register Mediacom Iowa poll.
Well, I mean, honestly, that was another thing that made me think that things were trending in Harris's direction in the last few days, because if, you know, as you said, that's a very highly regarded poll, and it was showing a 3-point advantage for Harris. And, you know, even if it would have been less than that, the possibility of Harris winning Iowa led me to believe that things were trending in that direction. And that clearly was not the case. You know, I think polling, it's very difficult now for a lot of reasons. You have a lot of Republicans and Trump voters in particular that don't want to answer polls. They've tried to make adjustments for that, but that clearly didn't work. You know, people not answering their cell phones, and they're trying to find ways around that, text messaging and so forth. But I think it's really an industry. I don't want to call it a crisis necessarily. Maybe it's not that extreme, but it's really an industry that's having a difficulty. And I think you're going to have, you know, going forward, you're going to have more and more distrust. 2022, the midterm polls are actually fairly accurate, but I think this is another kind of black eye, and it looks like pollsters are really unable to get good samples, and I think they clearly are. So they're flying blind a little bit.
And it's interesting because the quality of the polling has improved. I mean, the technology, the techniques,
right.
We're always told that it's getting better, and the results don't necessarily pan out that way.
Well, and you know, the statistical techniques they utilize are more and more sophisticated, But ultimately, there's a little bit of art and guesswork to this, and it's really difficult to thread that needle. I mean, the other thing, I don't know how much of this came into play, but there's been some discussion that no pollsters or want to be outliers. So some of the pollsters who may have actually been more accurate, but were outlined more pro-Trump, for example, were afraid to publish those results because they, the other pollsters weren't showing that. And so they kind of tweaked their methodology a little bit to be more in line with other pollsters. Well, here we are, you know, the other pollsters were not accurate, so.
One last, and I don't know how much thought you've given this, but what is the legacy then of Joe Biden? And what is the legacy of Kamala Harris, who had a very short election ramp up, and the quality of the race that she ran, and the quality of the presidency and the decision by President Biden?
Well, I think, in my view, the legacy of the Biden presidency will be a positive one. I think he did many things right in terms of recalibrating the economy more toward the green economy, trying to onshore many industries to help particularly blue-collar workers. And I think those are things that Trump will probably try to take credit for if he continues some of these programs that, that Biden started. I mean, I think he got caught on the negative end of the immigration debate, and I think he was seen as too lax, particularly early in his term on immigration. And I think that's a issue that caught both Trump and Harris off guard. I think that the issue, the, some of the Middle Eastern issues, his support for Israel led to somewhat of a backlash, and that maybe hurt both him and Harris. Harris's legacy, you know, is a little bit more ambiguous, and she was never in charge of things. And are you asking more as a candidate?
Yeah, as a candidate, because once again, it's the second time a woman has led a major party ticket and was not able to win, but her circumstance is so much different than Hillary Clinton's.
Yeah, I mean, I think, honestly, it's hard for me to argue with anything she did. I think she ran a pretty effective campaign in a lot of ways. I think that the headwinds with inflation were probably something that were going to be difficult for any Democratic candidate to go against, and the immigration issue as well. But I'm not sure another Democratic candidate, given the results we saw yesterday, could have done better. So I think, given what she had to work with, she ran a pretty effective campaign. I do think there are probably voters who don't want to vote for a woman candidate. And so that may have hurt her, but it's hard to judge how much that was really, or that led to the result that we had. But I think there probably are voters that vote for a woman candidate.
Our thanks to Western Illinois University political scientist and arts and sciences dean, Dr. Keith Beckelman. Charlotte Blue is her stage name, but she went by the name Charlotte Boyer when she took the stage of the Black Box Theater to perform for us. So here is Charlotte Blue with Free Like a Bird.
I'm a little kid again. Don't worry, my friend, I'll see you again. But just promise me you'll always give in love. Now you should follow this promise, it isn't tough. And I'll tell you this, you got to learn to love. See, you got to learn to give to those who got it rough. Oh, I'm sorry, friend, this is my time to go. Yeah, I've already told you all you need to know. Whoa, wouldn't it be nice, wouldn't it be nice if I could fly? Because I'd be the bravest, bravest bird in the sky. Whoa, I'd be free, free from all of my pain. To fly away. Yeah, I am free, I am free, I am free just like a bird. I am free, I am free, I am free just like a bird. I am free, I am free, I am free just like a bird.
That's Free Like a Bird by Charlotte Blue, performed a few years back at the Black Box Theater in Moline. She has a new release. It's called Delusional, and that's now available on Spotify, YouTube, and Apple Music. On the air, on the radio, on the web, on your mobile device, and streaming on your computer, thanks for taking some time to join us as we talk about the issues on the cities.
At IHM VCU, we've always been here for you. You are and always will be our top priority. We care about your financial health, and we are here. IHM VCU is a proud supporter of WQPT.
The future, that's where our minds are at Western Illinois University Quad Cities. We are innovators, searching for something new outside of the textbooks. Dog-loving, leadership-driven, world-changing. Whether you choose to study on campus or online, your future is designed on your terms. Start your future at wiu.edu/QC.
Public Affairs programming on WQPT is brought to you by the Singh Group at Merrill, serving the wealth management needs of clients in the region for over 35 years.